It's been called a space opera, a Western in space, and the parallels to World War II are hard to ignore. But when Star Wars came out in 1977, it was a true original. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. As fans wait breathlessly for their chance to see the new installment in the Star Wars series, we are going to take a look back. We'll talk about why this film captivated so many, why it has endured, and how it's influenced movie making, storytelling, and individuals. We want to hear from you this hour. What does the original trilogy mean to you? Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Star Wars Episode IV, A New Hope, opened on May 25, 1977. It was not a highly anticipated film, but word of mouth spread quickly, and it became the most popular film of all time, at least up to that point. Filmgoers were electrified, and for some, it started a fandom that would last for a lifetime. This hour, we're going to talk about the phenomenon that is Star Wars, and we want to hear from you. Is Star Wars important to you? Why? Why has it stayed with you all of these years? You can call us at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we're going to start off by hearing from some lifelong fans who attended a Star Wars art show at the Palak Studio Gallery in Des Moines last weekend. Iowa Public Radio news reporter John Pemble visited the gallery and asked patrons and artists about the impact Star Wars has had and continues to have on their lives.
I guess I'll be giving my age away here, but I saw the first movie. I was 4 years old when the first movie came out the first time originally in the theater. And for me, I Princess Leia was one of the first really strong female characters that was introduced to me. When I was growing up, it was Princess Leia and Wonder Woman. And that impression that you could be the Princess Leia, you could be strong and vulnerable at the same time. My mom likes to tease me. I wanted to change my name to Princess Leia when I was a kid. So, so I was a really big fan from the start.
I saw Star Wars when I was 7 years old in the theater, and it made a very significant impact on my life. I remember as, you know, maybe 8, 10, 12, you know, drawing Star Wars pictures, and I made a big banner that said Star Wars that I hung up in my room, and it was just so ingrained in my childhood that it's a part of my life.
I have seen all of the films, probably 37 or more times. I have all of them. My son now is 10 years old, and he's living the Star Wars, so it's kind of cool to see his generation.
I saw Return of the Jedi in theaters when I was a kid, and I just enjoy it that much. I have a lot of fun with it. I have a lot of fun with the artwork that I've been doing, Star Wars themed stuff. People seem to really respond well to it. I watch the films all the time, you know, every chance I get.
Can you count how many times you've seen the films?
The original three, can't even fathom how many times I've watched that. I've had it on VHS and DVD and every other format I could possibly find. I've had it. So
I just like the, you know, watching something that's so far away from real life that, you know, I mean, when you watch a show, you kind of want to zone out. You just want to watch somebody else's life. And then you're going to the next level when you watch, you know, a sci-fi show like Star Wars, because it's not only someone else's life, but it's also just so far from reality that it's, you know, it's fun. It's interesting.
Return of the Jedi is just the best one out there. It's so much. And then leading into, you know, everything, Empire and even A New Hope, all of that stuff, it's just, it's hard to pick one, but Return of the Jedi is always the best.
We've seen glimpses of the new films. What is your prediction, your impression?
I'm really stoked about it. I actually got a Kylo Ren Darth Vader tattoo done today before I came here.
Kylo Ren is the new Sith Lord, and you have a tattoo.
I did, and since it's Disney-owned now, I figured it was only right to get a... it's a Lion King Pride Rock kind of Darth Vader passing on the torch to Kylo Ren by holding him up. And I thought that was adorable, and I needed it, so I did it.
The voices of Star Wars fans there collected from Palak Studio Gallery in Des Moines last weekend. We heard from Samantha Hackett, Sean Palak, Bobby Joe Hare, Raymond Martin, Melanie Fanning, and Ryan Gillespie. We're talking about the phenomenon that is Star Wars this hour, and we do want to hear from you. Tell us about the role Star Wars has played in your life, why it's important to you. 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And with me now is Justin Reams. He is an assistant professor of film studies at Iowa State University. Hello, Justin. Hi, Justin. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
All right. And I can hear you, which is great. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
Now, you're not quite old enough to remember 1977, but help us put that opening of Star Wars in perspective. In preparing for this film, I am old enough to remember 1977, although just barely. One of the younger people that I work with was talking about someone who was 8 years old when Star Wars opened, but she hadn't asked if they'd seen the movie. And I said, well, of course they saw the movie in the theater, because everyone saw the movie in the theater in 1977. When this movie blew up and word of mouth spread, how was it different from anything that had come before?
So to put this movie in historical context, it's worth thinking about some of the important films that were coming out in the 1970s, especially the first half of that decade. So think of Francis Ford Coppola's The Godfather 1 and 2. Think of Roman Polanski's Chinatown. The films that were coming out during this era were often very dark and gritty. They often were morally ambiguous. There wasn't a clear-cut line between good and evil, and there was no guarantee that good was going to win the day. This is also true of Martin Scorsese's early films from this era, like Mean Streets and later Taxi Driver. And so Star Wars was a pretty dramatic departure from that style that had started to solidify in New Hollywood in the 70s. So the title A New Hope is appropriate. It's a much more hopeful film. It's optimistic. Good will prevail over evil. The lines are clearly drawn between the good characters and the evil characters for the most part. But more importantly than that, I think it's just this tremendous sense of spectacle that you get in the Star Wars film. People were going not so much because they were interested in the plot, for example, but because they wanted to see something really fresh and new. So all these different aliens that you're exposed to, the space battles, the explosions, it was just sheer spectacle. And along with Steven Spielberg's Jaws in 1975, this was a film that really helped to usher in the era of the summer blockbuster, the kind of big budget spectacle that's become just a staple of American cinema.
Well, and Jaws was also a movie that was rated, I think it was rated PG, and Star Wars was a movie that everyone could see. Did that change things too? Because, you know, you talked about some of the other films that had been big and really got a lot of critical acclaim. Those weren't movies that kids could see.
Sure, that's absolutely right. And this is critical because it's only in 1968 that the rating system begins. And so this actually gives filmmakers much more freedom to do things that they couldn't do before. Before 1968, there was this censorship system, and there was a production code that limited what you can show in films. So at first, what you get in the late 60s and early 70s is filmmakers who are really eager to kind of go into these adult territories that they couldn't go into before. And that's why you start getting these much darker films. Even Kubrick's A Clockwork Orange from the early 70s, and another good example of this. But now, again, you're right, we're moving towards something that's a little bit more family-friendly, that's a little bit more accessible. It's a counterpoint in many ways from the darker, grittier Hollywood of the early 70s.
Now, I think people who haven't been part of the Star Wars universe sometimes feel like it's kind of an intimidating world to get involved in, because there are so many different elements. But when this movie came out, of course, it was the first time anybody had heard of Star Wars. I think it's really interesting that it gives you the feeling that it's part of something bigger, just calling it Episode 4. Obviously, George Lucas had a plan even when he released this first movie without knowing whether it would be popular or not.
That's right. It's worth emphasizing that the first audiences in 1977 wouldn't have seen that title Episode 4 that was added a bit later, because there was this fear that it would just be too confusing for early audiences. Where are the first three episodes? But nonetheless, even with that put aside, Lucas does really just throw you into this world, I think. He doesn't waste a lot of time with kind of boring exposition explaining how this world works and the characters. He just kind of assumes that this is a real life place and that you'll kind of feel your way around and understand these characters.
Now, I mentioned earlier that there are ways to pigeonhole Star Wars. You can talk about the fact that it's kind of like a Western and it's kind of like a soap opera and it's kind of like a monster movie. It has all of these different elements. What made it so new for people?
Well, I think it's partly because it is combining so many different genres and elements. George Lucas likes to call it a space opera. And by that, he means it's a blend of fantasy and science fiction. So on the fantasy side, of course, you have, you know, a princess in despair. You have sword battles. But then you also have this futuristic technology. We're in outer space. And so it's blending those genres. But as you mentioned, there are a number of different genres that are present. You have elements of the Western, even to some extent, film noir with a character like Han Solo. He's very reminiscent of like the Humphrey Bogart of the 1940s, right? He sticks his neck out for nobody. He's hard boiled. He's tough. And then eventually, of course, he becomes ethical. He does the right thing. So you have all these different elements melded together in, I think, a very effective and coherent way.
We have an email from someone who's already making fun of my grasp on the Star Wars universe, although I have been a fan since 1977. But he said he laughed out loud when he heard me call the original Star Wars a true original because he'd just watched Akira Kurosawa's The Hidden Fortress this past weekend. That's not to say that I don't love Star Wars, but the influence of that film on the first movie proves the axiom that good artists borrow and great artists steal. So he would like to hear your thoughts about the influence of that film on the first Star Wars movie.
Right. I mean, again, there's something very original about what George Lucas is doing, but he's borrowing from all sorts of sources. So it's not just that he's using different genres, but he's using very specific sources. He's using the films of Akira Kurosawa. He's using footage of battles, dogfights from World War I and World War II to kind of orchestrate the closing sequence of A New Hope. He's using elements from classic mythology. We have, for example, elements of the Oedipus story present, right, where we have this violent conflict between a son and his father, between Luke Skywalker and Darth Vader. So he's really just kind of remixing all of these classic stories, all of these archetypes. He's also heavily inspired by the writings of the mythologist Joseph Campbell, who talks about these archetypes, these stories that survive the test of time, these characters that are kind of larger than life and mythic. And all of these are coming together in a kind of pastiche in the Star Wars films.
Now, Star Wars at the time and has continued to inspire fans in some really interesting ways. And I want to talk about the fan fiction universe that came about after Star Wars was released and a lot of the different things that Star Wars has influenced. We're going to have to take a short break, but we will be back to talk more about that in just a moment. Justin Reams is with me. He's a professor of film studies at Iowa State University. We'll also get to the phones in just a moment. We do want to hear from you. Why is Star Wars important to you? Do you remember seeing the first film in the theater? How did that change you? We'd love to hear your thoughts. 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk. Send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about the phenomenon that is Star Wars. Of course, all fans are waiting for their opportunity to see the new installment in the Star Wars series. But this hour, we're taking a look back at how Star Wars became the incredible force that it is today. With me, Justin Reams, professor of film studies at Iowa State University. And also joining us now is Mark McDermott. He's a pop culture scholar and a native Iowan. He wrote a chapter in Finding the Force of the Star Wars franchise. Hello, Mark.
Yes, good morning. Great to be here.
Yeah, thank you so much for being here today. And I want to talk to you and Justin both about your paths to becoming Star Wars fans. Mark, when did you first see the film?
Well, this was the year that I graduated high school, so that dates me even further than anyone else, I think, here. And this is what was really useful about Star Wars, or I mean rather fun, is that there was no advance promotion or publicity for this. There was no Comic-Con, no internet or anything like that. I think the only coverage of science fiction TV or movies was a brand new slick magazine called Starlog that had just started coming out. And they had, all they could manage was a one-page preview of what was still being called The Star Wars and a couple of the Ralph McQuarrie production paintings and said, this is coming. It's got a guy named Luke Skywalker who's fighting the Galactic Empire. And then I think within a week or two, that was when Time Magazine came out. And while the cover featured Menachem Begin in Israel, but in the corner was a little fold-down promotion for the year's best movie. That was really when probably anyone first found out about Star Wars. So there was no build-up or anticipation. There was no way anyone could be disappointed, we'll say, when they went to see the movie. So I think I managed to see it either the first weekend it opened or the following weekend at the old Vista Theater in Storm Lake, Iowa. And it was fun. That was what I came away with. I was still kind of a young movie buff. I didn't know everything, but I appreciated the movie serial aspect of it. Even the fact that they opened with the old 20th Century Fox orchestra fanfare, and just it was like science fiction finally being made fun.
And you, at that point, were you already a Star Trek fan?
Yes, I was, and of course, Star Trek fans at that time. We were kind of a mopey lot because Star Trek had been canceled. It didn't look like it was coming back. Well, we did have the animated series, but within a few years, there were the plans to relaunch Star Trek because of the success of Star Wars. Well, that didn't happen. It was going to be part of another Paramount Network, which never got off the ground. But eventually, there was a Star Trek movie, which unfortunately was not as much fun. That was kind of my premise, is that before Star Wars, what did we have? 2001, not much fun. Planet of the Apes, 5 movies about a planet run by apes, still kind of a downer. Even George Lucas' first movie, THX-1138, well, not really fun. But then he made American Graffiti. That was fun, and he kind of went on from there.
So this was really the first time that you got to see good science fiction on the screen that was really fun on the big screen.
Yes, I think I referred to it as Flash Gordon done right.
Well, it's so interesting to hear your perspective because, I mean, I was 2 years old when I saw the first Star Wars, and my brothers and I were completely captivated. And we saw it in the theater enough times that I remember seeing it on the big screen, although I can't remember a specific occasion. You know, mm-hmm. It's all a composite memory. And then my cousins and my brothers and I, we spent our entire childhoods playing Star Wars and playing with our Star Wars figures and pretending to be people from Star Wars. So I think of it from a child's perspective, this galaxy that totally enraptured me. From the perspective of an older fan, it's really interesting to hear your reaction because it certainly didn't galvanize you in the same way.
Well, I think, we kind of saw how it was bringing in other elements, as you were saying, as Justin was saying, from other movies. Maybe we didn't catch the Kurosawa references, but we saw what we had wanted to see. Or it was almost an idealized version for those of us who really hadn't seen a lot of Saturday morning serials at the time, or Saturday afternoon. Saturday morning was cartoons, of course, but imagine if all those cartoons had bigger budgets or live people and stories that just went on and on forever. So I think that was, for people who were already into a fandom of any kind, it was a welcome sign, and it was probably the first example of what is now referred to as a nerdgasm.
Justin.
And it kind of made it safe to be a Star Trek fan or a Batman fan or of anything else that, you know, you kind of would get isolated in school, of course, for
right.
being a sci-fi nerd. And then, of course, when Star Wars comes out, suddenly, well, maybe in our minds it's cool to be a nerd, but not in real life. But it kind of made you feel much more special or loved, I guess, for having someone out there doing what we also now call fan service, to trying to push your buttons to get you to come into the theaters.
Justin, when did you become a fan?
So my memory is a little bit hazy, but as far as I can tell, I was a fan before I saw any of the Star Wars movies, because I recall I would play with Star Wars toys and with Star Wars cards and Star Wars video games. And it was only really a bit later, I think I was maybe 11 or 12 in the 1990s, when I finally got around to purchasing the films and seeing the three films. So again, this gets to your earlier point about how this universe had been created that was much larger than just the films themselves, right? And there was already this fan culture. And a number of my friends who were a part of it, I think, also hadn't seen the films, but it was just the thing to do, right? Again, much larger than the films themselves.
Well, we'll talk more about that fan universe. I want to get to a couple of callers. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Denny is on the line in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Denny.
Good morning. How are you today?
Very good. Now, you've been a fan, you say, before the first movie actually debuted.
I'm a little older than these guys, I think. The first reference I have in my collection is from 1974, a Variety clipping announcing that Lucas was going into production. Universal wouldn't sell him the rights to Flash Gordon, so he wanted to do a space movie, and that's how he came up with the Star Wars saga. He had to write it up himself, and he borrowed from, as they said, many sources.
Mm-hmm.
In 1976, the film had been mostly produced, so we're still working on effects, but at the Comic-Con in San Diego, which was going on starting in 1970, Charles Lippincott and the crew brought Star Wars material to show. A couple months later, in Kansas City, the World Science Fiction Convention, Mid-Americon was there, and they had a room set up you walk in, and there were props and spaceships and miniatures, the costumes of the robots, the Darth Vader uniform, and so on. We're standing there, big signs, no photographs. Oh, gosh, no, I got to take pictures. I had a sketchbook with me, and I started drawing as fast as I could. You know, 10-second sketches. What is this, Death Star? I don't know. X-Wing? I don't know. And I'm drawing as fast as I can, page after page, and this fellow about my age walked over and looked over and said, "What are you doing?" He said, "They won't let me take pictures. This stuff is beautiful. I mean, it looks old. It looks like a real universe." And he goes, "I know. That's really terrible. Hi, I'm Mark Hamill." He shook my hand, and he said, "You really like this stuff? Yeah, I was a film major, and I'm going to run a theater, and blah, blah, blah." And so I went on. "Well, here's my room number. Come up here tonight at 7 o'clock. So I went up, and there were four guys and Mark Hamill, I think one girl, and we got to sit and chat with him for 2 hours about making the film, about his experiences in London and Tunisia and with Lady Guinness.
Oh,
and
man.
I'm sure he's told these stories many times. But, you know, talk about being super hyper excited. And I came back and I told everybody I knew, "This is going to be the most successful movie ever made." And of course, then he's crazy. Later, somebody in print apologized to me because I was right.
Well, and of course, for anyone who doesn't know, Mark Hamill, of course, played Luke Skywalker. And
So
Denny, when you actually saw the film, obviously you were excited because of what you had already seen. But when you saw the film, what made it work for you? What was special about it?
There was joy in it. There was excitement. There was brilliance. There was humor. It wasn't like modern science fiction on television, which is all dark detective, post-Holocaust, you know, dystopias. This was a universe that, even with problems with the Empire, people survived and they got along and they got on with life. But it gave, you know, by starting with a farm boy suddenly being taken off on this great adventure. I mean, every farm kid in Iowa probably at some point has gone, "Geez, I wish I could get out of here," you know? It resonated with lots of people, especially people in small towns who felt maybe trapped.
Oh, yes.
Right. Now, in 77, when the film opened, it only opened in, I hear different numbers, 32 or 35 theaters in the country. Duane was one of them. Remember the old River Hills Theater up there? The best theater in Iowa, which, of course, they tore down for a basketball or an arena or something. They showed it at 8 o'clock that night. I had a ticket. I was working for the theater chain and having lunch with a projectionist. And at quarter to one, he says, "Well, I think I'm going to go run the print." I said, "Can I come?" yeah, can I call a friend? So he did, and he came. And so there were three of us in the River Hills. I think it was about 700 seats, watching a virgin 70-millimeter print of the film alone in this giant theater. It was magnificent.
Oh, wow.
So of course, when I went back that night to the showing, I was going, you got to see what's going on next. And shut up, Denny, shut up.
Oh, Denny, thank you so much for sharing this with us today.
One last story, quickly. I was running the theater in Jefferson, Iowa, the Sierra, and I did a radio ad involving the local car dealership, Harrison Ford.
Wow.
So those are my stories. Thank you.
Oh, Denny, thanks a lot for your call. And you can join the conversation, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. I want to get to Nathaniel on the line in Indianola. Hi, Nathaniel.
Hi there.
Hi. Now, I take it you're a younger fan of Star Wars.
That is correct. I was born in 88.
All right. So what got you involved?
Well, I just saw the videos on the VHS box collection in my parents' house. And I just never watched them, but I had seen Star Trek and other things. And finally, my dad said, okay, we're going to show you Star Wars. And I thought it was Star Trek, so I was all excited and I wanted to watch it. And I remember just falling in love with it. And that was great. And since the movies came out, I'm an avid reader and my mother is too. And what I called about was the wealth of books, particularly those set after the Return of the Jedi movie, the third movie released, all these books that are now not necessarily part of the movie canon, but there's years and years and decades of books written out there, and my mother and I have read most of those. And so for years, beyond the movie, I've been able to dream and listen and read and imagine about the Star Wars universe for hours and hours and hours and days on end, with these wonderful books and shows and then later video games and things with the series. And they've all been done so well. I feel like Lucasfilm and now Disney have done such a great job of keeping just enough of a leash on the creators that it all works together. There's not separate timelines. There's not a bunch of stuff going on. It feels like one huge universe that just keeps going.
Well,
and I wanted to share that.
Yeah, and Nathaniel, I know that some of the fiction is considered to be canon, which means that these storylines are supposed to be upheld in the movies, and some is not. I mean, do you feel like you can keep all of that straight, having read all of this fiction?
Oh, yeah. I don't believe, even if it's not official anymore, they still didn't get rid of it. They didn't say burn all your books and forget it. It's still out there. Just think of it as your imagination or the expanded universe, stuff that could be. They still leave it open for you to enjoy all this stuff that went before and all those people's hard work into writing these books and making these games and making these shows and action figures and all the memorabilia. They don't slam the door on it. Instead, they say, you know, hey, that's all great. But we're going to focus on this set of stuff and go from there. And because they did that, now they have even more distance to go. They're not tied to having to, for better or for worse, they're not tied to having to go with the books that have already been written. So I'm very excited for this movie.
And what is the one thing that, above all others, you hope to see in the new movie?
I'm just really tickled to death that they filmed it more like the original trilogy, less CG effects and more practical stuff. And I'm just so excited to see another movie and get that experience again.
All right, Nathaniel, thank you so much for your call. And since Nathaniel brings up all of the fiction, Mark, I want your take on that. That was pretty unusual for the time to have this explosion of fan fiction even after the first movie, right?
Yes. I was also thinking about
when Marvel Comics came out with Star Wars, it was really kind of another, there was an editor and writer named Roy Thomas who had already convinced them that maybe we should do this adaptation of this obscure pulp character named Conan the Barbarian. And so a couple years later, he came in and said, there's this new movie coming out called Star Wars. We should really jump on the comic book adaptation of it. And I believe the first issue of that came out before the movie, and they didn't have all their references together. So Princess Leia had red hair, and Darth Vader was green. But it really, even that became one of the best-selling comics of all time, and it quite probably helped Marvel Comics stay in business at the point. But as far as fan fiction, I think... It was really part of the Star Wars universe was that it was very, very, I am losing my head for the term, but it was very disparate. There were many, many characters and members of other cultures or other planetary races, so forth. So there was a lot of material that you could springboard your fiction from.
Absolutely. And do you want to add anything to that, Justin?
I'll just say one of my favorite lines about cinema is from Roger Ebert. He wrote, "We live in a box of space and time. Movies are windows in its walls." And I think Star Wars illustrates that really nicely. It just does a great job of taking you out of your own time and out of your own place. And it just creates this other universe. And again, that universe is not limited to the films themselves, but all these other manifestations, video games, books, cards, etc.
We're going to take another short break. We'll be back in just a few minutes. We're talking about the phenomenon that is Star Wars. With me, Justin Reams, professor of film studies at Iowa State University, and Mark McDermott, Star Wars fan and pop culture scholar. And we'll love to hear from you as well. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about the phenomenon that is Star Wars. We're taking a look back, and we'd love to hear from you about what these films mean to you. When did you become a fan? Why has it remained something important in your life? 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And over the years, of course, Star Wars fans, Star Wars collectors have been the butt of many, many jokes. Most recently, Saturday Night Live did a little sketch, a commercial of sorts, for some of the new toys coming out with the new movie. Here's just a moment from that commercial.
All your favorite Star Wars heroes and villains.
I have Rey and Finn.
I have three of each. One to display, one to open, and one just in case.
Why?
Non-stop Star Wars action, like Chewbacca with clip-on forest armor.
Time to suit up.
Or just look at him. Radical.
All right, just a moment from Saturday Night Live, poking fun at some of the older Star Wars fans and older Star Wars collectors. And we have a serious Star Wars collector and fan here with us now, Ryan Persinger in Des Moines. Hello, Ryan.
Hey, how are you doing?
Great. Thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, yeah, no problem.
And now you first became a fan when you were 4 years old. Tell me what captivated you about Star Wars.
It was like everyone else said, just a whole other universe you could submerge yourself in and be a part of. And just, it looked so real at the time, and even now it's still fun.
When did the collecting start for you?
Collecting started in 1994. It was the first thing I got. I'm not sure. I might have had some of the older stuff, but my brothers and sisters, I'm the baby, but they never had anything Star Wars, so I kind of started that with my family.
And when you first started getting the toys, I assume that they were things to play with, right?
Yes, of course.
Was there a point when that started changing for you, when you started thinking, you know, I want to get this stuff and I want to keep it in mint condition?
It wasn't too long after. Probably the first couple of years I opened everything. And then around in the 90s when the special editions came out, when they came back out in the theaters, is when all the merchandise started to really show up again. And I don't know what caused me to do it, but probably just looking at all the magazines and talking to other collectors and stuff. But yeah, I just started keeping most of it in the box. And like that SNL joke, there are some where I have one in the box and one to play with.
So tell me about your collection today. I've seen some pictures. It is extensive, but give us a thumbnail sketch.
Thumbnail, I have probably 200 or more in the box and probably a good 100 out of the box that I played with. And sometimes I'll focus on certain characters. Like I have a whole shelf of just Yoda, a whole shelf of Boba Fett, or certain little genres like Pez dispensers, or I like food items. So I have a collection of Pringles cans and Pizza Hut boxes from the 90s and cereal boxes and just all there's so many different little genres and types of things you can collect. It gets it's a little crazy sometimes.
Why do you keep collecting?
It's just fun. Every time I go out, it's almost like a mission. If I gotta go get some milk, I might as well go check out the toy aisle and see if there's something I need. And I like to go antiquing with my wife, and we'll find just random stuff from 1977 up till now, just tiny little things to add to some part of the room.
What is your favorite piece?
Trying to think about this. I think my favorite piece is probably the first thing I ever got. It's a bendable Chewbacca toy, and he has a ridiculous smile on it. And that was the very first thing I got. The close second might be an autographed Darth Vader action figure that says "To Ryan from Darth Vader" on it. That's pretty neat, too.
And so we have put up the pictures of your collection on our Facebook page if people would like to take a look at that. And I notice you have stuff from the original trilogy. You have stuff from the trilogy of prequels. Is there an emphasis in your collection?
I probably the original stuff just because that's what I have the majority of. But I still have a decent amount of stuff from the newer three. But not in any particular thing. I'm not, be it a glass from Burger King or an action figure from Walmart, I enjoy it all.
And what are you most excited about with the new film?
Just to see another Star Wars movie. It's gonna be great. To actually get in on the ground floor in this series will be fun. And like other callers have said, going back to the practical effects, I think will be really fun to see.
Well, Ryan, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thank you very much.
Ryan Persinger is a Star Wars fan and collector in Des Moines. Again, you can look at some of his collection on our Facebook page, Iowa Public Radio. Very impressive collection. And we want to hear from you as well. What does Star Wars mean to you? Give us a call, 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And with me this hour, I have Mark McDermott, a pop culture scholar, also a native Iowan, and also Justin Reams is here with us from Iowa State University, a professor of film studies. And I do want to get back to the phones and talk with people about their experiences. And here's an email I want to share. This one is from Kate in Iowa City. I was 13 and don't remember many of the plot details, but I'll never forget the experience. Dolby sound had just come out, as well as special effects of the stars blasting by. My friends and I were blown away, comparable to my first IMAX experience. And this one is from Myrna in Des Moines. She says, I saw it over Christmas break while I was in high school at the Spencer Theater, which was a grand old theater. I saw it with my older sister and her friend who were home from college. I have fond and vivid memories of both the movie and the evening. I felt so grown up, and it was the best movie from the opening to the end. Good and evil, fantastic characters, crazy sidekicks, adventure, most memorable movie experience ever. And it's fun to hear from a couple of women sharing their thoughts. We've had a lot of male callers this hour. And in fact, my husband even told me that one of his coworkers this morning asked him if he had coached me on Star Wars before the show today, which made him laugh because I'm a much bigger Star Wars fan than he is. But there is sort of this idea that Star Wars is a guy's movie. And Mark, I'd love to hear your comments on that, because from my perspective, I was a fan from the start. It never felt like a gender thing to me. And Princess Leia was the best woman hero I had seen on screen at that point and remains one of the greats. What are your thoughts about that?
I think Princess Leia really made the movie. Yes, it was one of the first good female role models in almost any kind of movie at the time. When Han and Luke burst into the prison block with no real plan for getting them out of there, she's the one who says, "All right, I'm making my own plan. Follow me if you want." So, she was much more she was tougher, and I think that was a better role model for anyone really who wants to go into a situation and be able to get out of it on their own wits. She was kind of the leader of the rebellion. She was ferrying plans back to her native planet. And I'm totally losing my train of thought. But it kind of makes up for, as someone recently posted to YouTube, a collection of every other female character in the original trilogy and all the dialogue they had, and it came to about 60 seconds, including Aunt Beru, who of course dies shortly after her three or four lines.
Right.
But I know that they are hopefully making up for that lack of female characters in the new trilogy, and part of it, I think, was just because it was being written. The original trilogy was still being written to guys, but they still had if you have to have a princess, you got to have someone who's not going to be helpless, unlike a fairy tale princess. So I think we realize that we have a princess in distress, but she better know her way around, because they're going into a place where she is to rescue her. She has to know the way out.
Right. Well, and she was even fully clothed in the first two movies.
Yes.
She wasn't scantily clad until she was enslaved in the third movie, which was pretty refreshing at the time and still pretty refreshing.
And then
say.
She choked the guy who put her in that slave
right.
costume. So I think we know the consequence of that kind of action.
Exactly. Let's get to the phones. Carol is on the line in Bettendorf. Hi, Carol.
Hi.
Hi. What's your story?
Hello. Well, my story is, I got two things, basically. I was in my mid-20s when I first saw it. And to be honest with you, when I first saw a preview for it at a different movie, I'm going, oh, this is going to be some schlocky kid kind of thing. But we went to go see it anyway, and it just blew me away. And being able to, we were late, so we had to be in one of the first seats right in front of the screen. And when that big, huge starship, you know, the big
the Star Destroyer, yeah.
Yep.
You started. You just wanted to look up and say, it's really there. But at the same time, it was a perfect escape. I was in a very rocky relationship, shall we say. Got divorced the following year. That was my escape. I saw it 7 times that first summer.
Wow.
I didn't care who went with me. I would have gone by myself if I could. Dragged everybody to it. It was the perfect escape.
And I know you.
Go ahead.
You also wanted to mention the music, which is really such an incredible part.
Oh yeah,
of
I know
movie.
You guys. What's wrong with you? The music was fantastic. The music was it was symphonic. There was themes in there that you had. There was the one little Jawa theme. We always kind of thought it was kind of like that one Grand Canyon suite with the donkeys walking down to the bottom of the Grand Canyon. It was reminded me of that. I bought on that big vinyl disc this actual soundtrack. It's somewhere in my basement now, and it was the
Boy,
music was
it.
Phenomenal.
Can I
and
speak
I
about
that? It brought symphonic music back to the movie.
Absolutely, Carol. Thank you so much for sharing. And was that Mark or was that Justin?
I was just going to say,
okay,
could I speak
Justin,
about
yeah.
the music for one moment?
Yes, please.
Yeah, I think the John Williams score is just outstanding, and it's really crucial to the success of the films. He makes extensive use of what are called leitmotifs, that is a melody that's associated with a specific character. So when you hear the Imperial March, you know that Darth Vader is around somewhere. This is a concept that comes largely from Wagner, the composer. But the music is just so striking and memorable, instantly recognizable. And it's not just that the music supplements the characters. In some ways, the music creates the characters, right? I mean, Darth Vader would not be Darth Vader without that
the
dark
Imperial March.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, and I think one of the really outstanding things about the music, now, when you look at the original trilogy, there are things about the movies that are dated. Mm-hmm. And, of course, they've been picked apart over the years. The music does not sound dated. The music is just stellar.
I agree.
I played the album for my son, who, of course, I will be seeing the movie with. Unfortunately, I'm working Friday night, so we'll be seeing it Saturday afternoon. And pointed out to him how a composer can pick, how John Williams especially picked the different characters and gave them each a theme that worked into whatever they were doing at the time. And as I recall, even playing it on a nice stereo system, the music still had this little quality of like it was still coming at you from an old movie theater speaker while a serial was playing. It was perhaps slightly clipped in one point or another, but even then it still filled the entire theater.
Yeah. Well, I want to, before we run out of time today, I want to bring John Boner into the conversation. He is the Iowa squad leader of the 501st Legion. And if you're not familiar with the 501st, it's an army of dark side Star Wars characters. And John, are you there?
I am here. How are you doing today?
I'm great. So just give us a little bit of an idea of what a member of the 501st Legion does.
Remember, the 501st Legion is a worldwide imperial costuming organization that is over 8,000 members strong worldwide. We have very high standards for our costumes, so you could literally say our stuff is screen accurate. So, like, literally, when you see a stormtrooper walk out or Darth Vader, it looks like he walked off the movie set.
All right. And I realize, I mean, you do a lot of good things. You do a lot for charities and go to visit children at hospitals and things like that. But you also spend a lot of time dressed up as a Star Wars character. Why do you do this?
It's a lot of fun. It's fun to pretend to be Darth Vader. It's a lot of fun to see the smiles on everyone's faces, to pose, take pictures. And generally just celebrate the love of Star Wars with other people.
Now, and I'm curious, in the time over the last 28 years, you know, when I was a kid, Darth Vader was so incredibly terrifying. And to me, even the idea of somebody dressing up as Darth Vader seemed really frightening because he was such an evil, evil character. And now the dark side has kind of become warm and cuddly. You know, there are lots of cartoons with Darth Vader as a dad and holiday things. And the 501st is a kind of a sweet, cuddly, dark side battalion.
Very true. We're actually, the 501st Legion actually takes a very strong stance in supporting anti-bullying. In fact, if you go to our website, 501st.com, the top news story is where the 501st Legion donated a set of Stormtrooper armor to a little girl in elementary school because she was getting bullied because Star Wars was a quote-unquote boys thing, and it's totally not. And then later the Legion kind of kidnapped her and took her to a Weird Al concert to meet Weird Al.
All right, so universes collide there. So, John, how many Iowans are part of this battalion?
There's over 25 members in the state of Iowa that are active costumers. We do a lot of things, primarily Des Moines, Iowa City, Cedar Rapids, Council Bluffs. We try and do events all over the place. Here in the state, we do a lot of things like at the Iowa Science Center in Des Moines. We do things with the different sports teams, Clinton Lumber Kings, the Cedar Rapids Rough Riders. We try and be everywhere and trying to promote that you know it's fun. You know, Star Wars is fun. Costuming is cool. And we also try to raise awareness for different charities and things like that.
Well, John, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Thank you very much.
John Boner is the Iowa squad leader of the 501st Legion. And we are out of time today, but Justin Reams, thank you so much for being here today.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And when are you going to see the new movie?
I will see it shortly.
All right. So you don't have tickets already?
I don't.
Oh, all right. Mark McDermott, thank you so much for being here today.
It has been great fun.
All right. Thank you very much, and may the Force be with you. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbie.